Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 6th of November. This hour of the program, we're going to be talking about how President-elect Barack Obama changed the Electoral College map. We're going to be looking at 2008, 2004, and 2000. It's interesting, if you have the New York Times today, they have a special voting section which gives a huge map of the United States with a headline, "For Most of the Country, a Blue Shift." And it is quite remarkable to look at this map and see how much blue there is. Where are the big changes here? Are they changes that will make the Democrats happy for years to come? How did Barack Obama achieve this kind of change? And we'll be welcoming your phone calls, as we always do. We're happy to have with us Professor Alexander Lamas. He is professor, associate professor of political science at Case Western Reserve University, and has joined us many times to analyze the race of the presidential year 2008, and will be here today to analyze the results with us. Our phone number, as always, is 800-486-8655. If you would like to send an email, then send an email at talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. Professor Lamas, hello. Thanks so much for being with us.
Good morning.
Hello. I was amazed looking at this New York Times map this morning how much blue there is in this country.
Yes.
Isn't it amazing?
I'm glad you referred to it. In fact, I have it right in front of me. It's a terrific section. But recognize that all that blue is the shift since 2004.
Mm-hmm.
So if you looked at those various counties as to who carried them, whether it was Republican or Democratic, you'd start to see a lot more red and pink.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of the gain, it certainly is a sea of blue.
And where was the gain? Was it big cities? Was it minority vote in the country? Where was it that made the difference here? Or was it all of that?
In the states like Indiana and Virginia and North Carolina and Florida, New Mexico, Colorado, Nevada. I mean, these are all states, of course, that Barack Obama carried, and none of them were carried by John Kerry. And so you see this county by county. Indiana is just striking. There was a lot of dark blue. They have this the percent gain shaded shades of blue. You also see some pink and red running through the Appalachian Mountains and in an area that we used to call the Bible Belt, from Oklahoma all the way through Tennessee and up to parts of Kentucky. Those areas showed big gains for the Republicans.
Mm-hmm. Let's concentrate on Indiana for a moment. Of course, it's close to Illinois, which makes some difference with the media market hitting part of Illinois. But the Times makes reference to the move most noticeable in rural counties that had kept the state reliably red in previous elections. How did he campaign in rural counties? Why would rural counties in Indiana go Democratic?
Well, I think he made a special effort to show up in these places. In a sense, he was following the lead of the governor of Ohio, Ted Strickland, who made that sort of pitch in 2006 in Ohio. Strickland is from southern Ohio. He represented rural small-town counties in Congress, and in fact, he's a former minister. So he and Obama both took ads out on radio stations in those areas, and some of them the Christian broadcasting stations, and they just campaigned hard for that vote. And while you might not have carried those counties, you got a more substantial Democratic vote than is usual.
Right. We've said many times on this program, and with you as well, the phenomenal ground operation that Obama had. He was just for a couple years, it seems as though the campaign really knew what it was doing.
Well, that's right. And in fact, as people look back on how he got the nomination, they're zeroing in on his decision to go into the caucus states. And a lot of those caucus states are states that have not been Democratic and do have a lot of rural small town counties, and he was able to get a lot of delegates out of those caucus states, and then for the general election they just built on that organization in those states where Democrats usually don't make a strong effort.
Mm-hmm.
Nevada, Colorado, New Mexico, and the others, And probably they did the same in Indiana. You know, I didn't follow it that closely, but I know they, you know, Indiana, the Obama people were very happy with the fact that they ran almost neck and neck with Senator Clinton in the primary, and even though they, I think they narrowly lost the popular vote, and they probably just started right in after the general election.
What happened in Florida this go around? Who switched the vote in Florida?
Well, it's hard to tell. I was looking at the county map yesterday. The difference between Kerry and Obama, which, by the way, you can, if your listeners go on the New York Times website, they have a nice map, and then you can, when you click on the state, they will not only give you the county returns by party, but they will let you go back to 2004, 2000, 1996. So you, just with a click, you can see the changes.
Mm-hmm.
And I did this with my students yesterday. And the Tampa-St. Petersburg area was one that was not for Kerry, but Obama carried both of the two big counties in that area. Same thing with in southern Florida. While Kerry did okay there, Obama did better. And then in northern Florida, in Jacksonville, Duval County, Kerry did not carry Duval County. You might remember Obama made one of his last day stops in Jacksonville. Obama carried Jacksonville, Duval County. So I think, you know, it was across the board in Florida, an increase in all of these three areas, which are, you know, a little, they're different from each other.
And can we pinpoint, or is it different in each one of those counties, who made the difference? Was it youth vote? Was it the elderly vote? Was it white people? Was it African Americans?
Well, yeah, no, that's a good question. I think, you know, you recognize, of course, and your listeners do, that when we're talking about these counties and looking at these kinds of maps, we're dealing with aggregate data. We're just looking at changes in the aggregation by county or state. But to get at the question you just asked, we have to go to survey data, and that takes us to the exit polls. And listeners who want more should go to some of these websites like CNN.com or MSNBC, which give you the details of the exit polls. But in looking at that, you see that, of course, among young people, Obama did extremely well, and much, much better than Kerry. Kerry carried the 18 to 29-year-olds as well, but Obama carried them by much more.
In the West, there were changes in the West, certainly, as well. Salt Lake City, Utah, the Times reports today that McCain won Utah, but by 2,000 votes, George Bush had carried it by 80,000 votes.
Wow.
What made the difference in Salt Lake City, for heaven's sakes?
That I don't have any idea about. I must say Utah has been the most Republican, one of the most Republican states, along with Wyoming and Idaho. And I didn't focus in with my students as we were going around the country looking at states.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, but looking at the big New York Times, the blue shift, you know, you're exactly right. There's a lot of blue there in Utah.
There certainly is.
But I would, my guess would be that the same kind of appeal was made in Utah that was made in Colorado and New Mexico and Nevada, states that I think that, you know, Obama people thought they could win, and they did. And that is that it's a national appeal, but it's one made directly to these Rocky Mountain states that have not been going Democratic. They've been part of Red America, and it's a straight across the board appeal that people heard in Wisconsin about the war being a mistake and about the state of the economy being a disaster and the need to change direction from the Bush administration policies, and, you know, the strong argument made that a vote for McCain is a continuation of those policies. I think that must have resonated there as well.
One of the states, of course, that we concentrated on probably more than any other state was Ohio this year. Give me a rundown of Ohio. I don't know what the final percentage was in Ohio, but probably both, particularly the Republicans, spend a lot of time in Ohio and Pennsylvania. It didn't work out for them because...
Well, I think we probably ought to take them separately, Ohio and Pennsylvania. And we should definitely talk about Pennsylvania because there's some noticeable trends there. But let's take Ohio. For Republicans, Ohio is a must-win state because no Republican president has ever been elected without carrying Ohio. And so, of course, the Republicans made a strong pitch here. But Obama did, too. The day before the last day of the campaign, that is Sunday, he held these mega rallies in Cleveland, Columbus, and Cincinnati. And throughout the election, there's been an enormous ground game going in Ohio. I mean, I know, personally talking to people involved in it, there's a librarian on our campus who has devoted countless days. She'd taken vacation time to work for the Obama campaign, and she'd never done that before. And she said, a lot of her friends were doing that too. But in Ohio, what happened? We talked about this, a few months ago, and I've done some study of Ohio. political landscape has changed significantly since the 2004 election. In 2006, Ohioans elected a Democratic governor and a Democratic U.S. senator, and they were riding the anti-Iraq war wave that wasn't there in 2004, and especially hitting hard at the economic policies of the Bush administration. And Obama continued those strategies, and they paid off. For example, he carried the county that includes Cincinnati, Hamilton County, which for as long as anyone can remember, and any data I have seen going back many decades show has always been a Republican county.
Hmm.
So that's striking. The other thing, looking at the map of Ohio, the county map that I did yesterday using the New York Times site, Obama started in Toledo, not just with Lucas County, which includes Toledo, but the fairly large suburban county, Wood County, that's near there, carried those, went all across the northern part of the state going east, and then came down to the, Akron, Youngstown. Every county except one small county, Geauga County. Now, that was not the case with Kerry. Kerry carried the bulk of them, but he missed many, and he missed Wood County, which was a suburban, relatively upscale county that went for Obama. I can talk about Pennsylvania if you want.
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
Okay. And, because Pennsylvania got a lot of attention, of course, in the election, and that was because, looking at the red state, blue state divide, McCain campaign realized that they had to break in somewhere if they were going to win. If they held Ohio and then they took away a big blue state, so they made a strong pitch, and I think the Palin nomination was perhaps key to their strategy. They thought that they could make a strong appeal to the more socially conservative Democratic voters in the western part of the state, in the counties surrounding Pittsburgh, and then they thought McCain's maverick image would help them in the very populous suburbs of Philadelphia. Well, it part of that worked out. They did, the Republicans did much better than they did 4 years ago in the county surrounding Pittsburgh. If you were to look at the county map, you would see they carried everything except Allegheny County, which includes Pittsburgh. But then you go over to the Philadelphia area, the Philadelphia suburbs, and they were just wiped out. There were huge margins for Obama in those predominantly white, heavily populous suburban counties of Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm. The other thing were these images, and I wonder how they translate. With Bruce Springsteen in Cleveland, I believe, and these huge rallies, the rally in Virginia at midnight a couple days or the day before the election, 2 days, I guess, or it's something like 1 in the morning, these huge things that you would see on your television screen of tens of thousands of people. I wonder if that translated into votes at the last minute at all, because Obama seemed to target those areas, going to Indiana very, very late in order to make sure he carried that, Virginia going there very late. It seems to me as though it may have rallied a few people in those close states.
Well, I think that's certainly possible. But you're right. Every one of those states he touched on in the last days of the campaign were red states in 2004, and ending with that big rally in Manassas, Virginia, and
yes,
Prince William County. In fact, again, if you look at the New York Times website, you look at the Virginia County map for Cary, Prince William County, which is an outer suburban county of Washington, Cary didn't carry it, but Obama did. So it was successful. And North Carolina, of course, has not been called by some news outlets, but it Obama's has got a substantial lead there, and I think that will hold. So he'll probably, you know, North Carolina will be in his column too, which is amazing when you think there are three southern states there this time.
Right.
For the Democrats.
Do you think that there was a change in the way John McCain ran this campaign? Do you think there was a change in the image that he was presenting? You talk about the maverick image, and they said maverick, maverick. But it seemed as though this campaign really was appealing to a base, and they seemed off track with William Ayers and not looking at those social conservative issues that you talk about that have served them well. They seemed didn't have to, any kind of message, and Republicans are usually very good about being on message, on message, on message. They didn't seem to have one this go around.
Well, I think that's exactly right, and they had messages, but they did change, and people pick up on that as erratic. I think the I'm not exactly sure, you know, why that was the approach. Possibly, you know, they looked at it and they said, this is an extremely difficult year for a Republican,
right,
given that 80% of the people see the country as going on the wrong track, that the Republican president's approval ratings are hovering around 25%, and we've just had this fiscal meltdown on a Republican administration's watch. So they were just, you know, searching for anything that would work, I think. But in retrospect, and, you know, I don't know what use it is to say that in retrospect, but in retrospect, it might have been better for McCain to have a consistent policy from April on and stick with it.
We're going to take phone calls. Our guest is Professor Alexander Lamas, Associate Professor of Political Science at Case Western Reserve University. We're looking at the Electoral College map, comparing 2008 with 2004 and 2000. And we'll, of course, ask the question, what does this all mean? Is there some kind of mandate here? Does it mean that the country has become more liberal or not? We'll take your phone calls. Email is talk@wpr.org. And again, our number is 800-486-8655. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The second hour of our program today, the award-winning documentary filmmaker, and his work includes Why We Fight and the Trials of Henry Kissinger. He's the author of The American Way of War, Guided Missiles, Misguided Men, and A Republic in Peril. To your phone calls now, when we go to, great, Jim from Salt Lake City is calling, so we can get some inside scoop of what's going on there. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Kathleen. Hey, I was just reading the Salt Lake Tribune while listening to you to answer some of your questions. The voter turnout 4 years ago was 76% in Salt Lake County, and it went down to 64%.
Oh, my.
So, and I have a couple of theories why that was. Even though McCain is a Western Republican, I attended the GOP convention, and I have never seen so many people sit on their hands and just grumble when he spoke. They just felt that he wasn't conservative enough, and he was just, you know, a liberal, which I was really surprised. I think the other thing is, I think there's still a remorse over Mitt Romney that, you know, they were so excited about him, and then having to be settled with someone who is your last choice also dampened the enthusiasm. And then I think the other thing that helped the Democrats was Peter Caroon, who is a cousin to Howard Dean, the Democratic chair, was running for county mayor for his second seat.
Hmm.
And so Salt Lake County swept all the local Democratic seats, and then there was just a lot more excitement about their candidates, and the GOP just couldn't get people fired up about John McCain because they just thought he was too liberal, maybe because of his immigration policies or whatever, but they just never warmed up to him.
Mm-hmm. That's a good analysis. Professor Lamas.
Yes, no, that's very helpful. You know, in my presidential elections class, every student's been assigned at least one state, and that the student who has Utah, I think, was a little disappointed he had such a predictable red state. So I'm going to talk to him and tell him all these interesting things we've got to focus on.
Right. And yet, why would they think he's a liberal when his choice of a vice presidential candidate was very much a social conservative?
Well, that's right, but it doesn't take away, you know, what his positions were in the past on immigration reform and other things that were going against the mainstream Republican positions.
Thanks, Jim, so much for calling. Esther is next from Madison. Hi, Esther.
Yes. I wish you'd discuss the influence of the computer on this election. It's the first time we've had an election that's had that mass participation on the part of the citizen.
Well, that's right. Each election cycle, of course, has seen more and more online activity as the country has adapted to widespread broadband availability. But this is it is simply amazing. The two campaigns were directly communicating with their supporters, millions of them, providing them with their own campaign videos. They were putting out online campaign ads, things that didn't even run on expensive television, but were out there, so they were usually picked up and commented on in the media. This is clearly the future. I mean, we're not going back to the pre-internet age. So I guess the short answer is that we don't fully understand how this has changed American politics.
What do you think, Esther?
Well, I think it has. It's the first time I'm 93 years old.
You're 93?
Yes.
Oh, you sound so young.
I voted in lots of elections.
Huh.
And this is one which has enabled mass participation on the part of the electorate.
Right.
In a way that we didn't have before before this.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. And probably has been a source of inspiration for both the Democrats and the Republicans. The speeches you could see online, the musicians who rallied from one side to the other and presented videos of music. I don't think you can underestimate that. People went to that in droves.
That's right. And also all this analytical material that's available, that we've been talking about.
Yes.
I've been promoting the New York Times website, not because I have stock in New York Times, but because it's a wonderful resource for the citizen to find out about these things that really before only small handfuls of analysts had available to them.
Right. I thought that I was going to take a break yesterday because I, quite frankly, Professor Lamas, have overdosed on the whole thing. But there I was yesterday afternoon, dog tired from staying up until the wee hours of the morning, going to the internet. I couldn't help myself for hours trying to analyze what had happened.
Right. I found myself somewhat frustrated because we had an election night party for my students, and then I had to get up early and go meet with them and talk about this. And I didn't have time to fully look at all those.
Right. Did they show up for class? They were at the party.
Oh, they did.
Good
yes.
for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had 50 students in that class.
And tell me about your students. We've heard so much about this being a transfer of power to a younger generation, et cetera. Did you sense this incredible enthusiasm among your students?
Yes, just by the turnout in that course, which normally has about 25 when I teach it in an election year. So hasn't had this kind of turnout since 92. So I think the election generated great interest, and they were voting. You know, a lot of students were registering to vote in Cuyahoga County in Ohio, even if they were from another state, particularly if they were from a state that wasn't in play. I sense that. But, of course, you know, I'm looking at political science-oriented students, so it's not a cross-section of the campus.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much, Esther, for your call. Lauren is next from Madison. Hi, Lauren.
Good morning.
Hello.
Although I'm a good Democrat and very happy about the results and would be happy if there was some fundamental shift going on, I'm a little cautious and I'd like to hear the professor's comments on it. On given the economic times and the administration that Obama's replacing, I think that has a lot more to do with it, him as an individual and the fact the economy is so bad. Then there's a fundamental shift towards the Democrats.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I'm glad you brought that up. What do you think, Professor Lamas?
Yes, no, that's a great question. I think a lot of people are asking it, and the term we use in political science to look at these things is realignment of the party system, and we certainly won't know for some time if we're going through one of those fundamental shakeups of the underlying partisan attachment of voters. When we look at this map, of course, we see, Democratic achievements in states where they haven't been doing that well, Virginia, North Carolina, Florida, and those western states, and you say, well, there's a potential. But I think it is really going to depend on how things go in the Obama administration. You could say in 1932, when Roosevelt was elected president, that his vote was fundamentally a repudiation of Hoover, and it was. All income groups voted for Roosevelt at about 57%, and then as a result of the fundamental changes that occurred during the New Deal, by 1936, you had a very different electoral map. You had the upper-income people wedded to the Republican Party. Those who have less had seen the Democrats in a totally different light than they had before the Depression and the New Deal, and they became Democrats, and that's how we got the New Deal realignment. Now, whether we have something like that in the next few years, I think it's going to depend on how the course of the Obama administration and American and really world history plays out.
I heard on the radio this morning people expressing their hopes for this administration, and it was this list of, he's going to get us out of war, he's going to help me with my health care, he's going to do something to help me finance my college education, he's going to help get millions of people jobs in this country. And the list went on and on, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, people are expecting this from a new administration. How much can he possibly do?
Well, that's right. I think there are high expectations. I mean, I think we always have high expectations when a new administration comes in, but apart from that and apart from the kind of analysis we've been talking about, we have to all step back and just marvel at what happened in terms of an African American becoming president and what that means given our long and tortured history of race relations in this country. And it's something that people of all parties are applauding in this country. And I've been moved by the statements that I've been hearing, and I'm sure you've been hearing from average voters just talking about this and what it means to them. African Americans, of course, but not just African Americans. I think a lot of white Americans or Hispanics also savor this moment.
Yes, they do. Yes, it was just all over the world too. Just striking images. I'm just waiting to see. I have a son who's in high school, and of course, it's not just in African American communities; it's all over. But the style, as you know, has been for guys to wear pants that go down to their knees almost. And Barack Obama has addressed them directly. Pull up your pants.
Really?
Yeah.
I haven't heard that.
So, not recently, but on the campaign trail. So I'm waiting to see if the influence will extend to that.
Wait, on the Lair News Hour last night, they went around the country and talked to just average voters. And it was one a white man in Washington, D.C., who said, my son is African-American. He said, I what a wonderful event this was for him and how excited I am for him to see this happen in our country. And moved my wife and I to tears, I'll tell you that.
Right. There were a lot of tears shed. I haven't seen that in this country for a long time. Tears of joy, tears of, it's happened. I don't think you can, that just goes to the heart, right? It goes to the heart.
And around the world, too, of course.
Yes.
You look around the world, most of the rest of the world is made up of people of color. And that's how they see this.
Thanks, Lauren, so much for your call. Our number is 800-486-8655. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Professor Alexander Lamas, Associate Professor of Political Science at Case Western Reserve University, is our guest. We're looking at the Electoral College, the way that Barack Obama, president-elect, was able to shift a lot of counties in places that have been red for a long time and fairly deeply red, some of them. And whether or not, I like the last question, this is a fundamental shift in the electorate or not. And we go next to John from Eau Claire. Hi, John.
Hello.
Hello.
Okay. Yeah, I'm a history buff, and I studied mostly the 1860s. Mm-hmm. And when I saw the map of the blue and red go up, I told my daughter I saw that map before. If you look at the states that seceded and the border states, they're the ones that voted for McCain.
Is that what you saw, Professor Lemus?
Well, actually, that was a lot closer to the map from 2004 because, you know, the heart of Dixie and the first capital of the Confederacy was Richmond, Virginia.
Right.
And North Carolina. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Florida went blue. And, of course, Florida wasn't, you know, much settled back then before air conditioning. But no, you're right. But that is the South. Used to be democratic because all the white people there were united in preservation of white supremacy. And when the civil rights movement shattered that racial segregation in the South, and we had the passage of the Voting Rights Act of 65 and the Civil Rights Act of 64, there was no reason for a one-party democratic South. So we began to develop a two-party South. And in presidential elections, the trend has been Republican, except for Jimmy Carter and Bill Clinton broke a few southern states away, too.
Anything else, John?
What's going to happen in detail in southern states is really fascinating.
And when do we see if there's been this shift? Is that midterm elections 2 years from now? Will we know, or...?
I'm sorry, for some reason I didn't hear the first part.
When we try to analyze whether or not this has been a fundamental shift, will we know that in 2 years when we have midterm elections again, or will we know that before 2 years from now?
I think 2 years is we'll know something. That certainly is what happened with FDR. He was very successful in the 1934 midterm elections, and that signaled something important.
Let's go next to Steve. Hi, Steve.
Yes, good morning.
Hi.
Yes, there is a shift, and I'm going to explain why. I'm a Republican that voted for Obama. Now, I want to just explain this because this country has come back to what I call common sense. We've had the extreme right for 8 years. And if Obama stays steady course, he's a very brilliant man. I did a lot of research on him. I worked in finance for many, many years and retired. I'm going to tell you something. This man is very bright. And if he does his own thing, he's going to do wonderful things for this country. If he bends to the far left, then we're going to be no better off than we just had been the last 8 years. And Obama is a very, very articulate, smart man. He has good advisors. He will do very, very well. I thought John McCain was his times was past. I thought the VP position was a real carnival. But Obama, if you do your research, and I did a lot of reading on this man, he may not have any of the skills that they thought he should have had, but I believe that this guy is going to bring common sense to the back. And I think the far left, if they think he's just going to go on with their programs, is going to be in for a big surprise.
Was he always your guy, Steve, or were you convinced? Did it take some time to convince you who to vote for?
You know, what I did was, you know, I was so disappointed. I knew George Bush. I know things that he did really well for this country, like save the Great Lakes, and he worked wonderful on the marine projects. I also know that Laura Bush and Cheney would fight all the time. I mean, George Bush has done what he's kept the country safe, but he has fallen on the economy because he's had bad staff, people. Cheney doesn't care about anybody. But I look at this man, so I started doing my reading. I don't want to listen to the Keith Olbermans or the Rush Limbaughs and all the rest of those people. I consider them all actors. But when I did my own research, I read about them. I read newspaper articles about them. I researched them from Harvard. This guy, financially, I mean, this guy has got the brains. If he gets the right advisors, I think he'll do very, very well. I think he's going to surprise a lot of people. And if you want to work, and he will get you jobs. He's not going to give a free lunch out to everybody.
Professor Lemus, this is an interesting perspective.
Yes, no, I agree with the assessment of Obama's intelligence and other admirable personal qualities. Because, you know, step back from it. He wasn't known 4 years ago on the national stage until he made that speech at the Democratic Convention. it's absolutely astounding how he's attained this achievement. And clearly, you have to look at those personal traits that the caller was talking about. But in terms of ideology, you know, we need to keep in mind that a lot of Americans don't really like to think in ideological terms. They may on occasion label themselves, you know, liberal, moderate, or conservative if asked by pollsters, but they're not that comfortable with it. And so when we get down to the policies, I think the caller is exactly right that Obama could be very successful if he focuses on achievements and stays away from having them labeled left or right. I mean, providing health care for everyone in America is not necessarily an ideological issue. It's something very practical to people, particularly those who don't have it or feel like they don't have good enough coverage or they're paying too much in copays. So we'll see how that plays out. You know, looking at the exit polls, the national exit poll, they do ask the voters, are you liberal, moderate, or conservative? And then they say how they voted. So the liberals, of course, 90% of them voted for Obama. The moderates, about 60%, voted for Obama. But the conservatives, and I think this is interesting, 20% of them voted for Obama, and about 80%, 78% actually voted for McCain. So that and the conservatives outnumber the liberals. They're about 34% of the sample said they were conservative. Only 22% said they were liberal, and the big category was moderate at 44. But that shows that there were a lot of conservatives, you know, who went with Obama, and I think they do not. I'm sure they don't want to hear a lot of liberal conservative clashes.
We're looking at the 2008 electoral map and talking about what it means, comparing it with the maps from 2000 and 2004 this hour. Our guest is Professor Alexander Lamas from Case Western Reserve University, where he's Associate Professor of Political Science. And I'm Kathleen Dunn. More phone calls in a moment here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go to an email, Professor Lamas, from Doug from Poplar. The Republican Party didn't lose this election because of McCain's approach to the election. They lost because when they had a chance to run the country, they were incompetent. Running any organization must require results. The electorate has given the Republican ideology an opportunity since Reagan. It's obviously failed. Even Greenspan has admitted that you can't run a government on ideology. You have to get results. I believe many people see Obama as someone who knows that.
Well, we're going to have, I think, a field day in later on analyzing the Bush administration, and once we get the papers and the full story, I don't think it's a simple question of ideology motivating President Bush. I don't know what the full picture will look like, nor do we know how he will be viewed in history. You ought to keep in mind that Harry Truman went out of office at about 25% approval rating. In the midst of the Korean War, and now he's considered a neo-great president. I'm not saying that President Bush is going to be resurrected in that way, but we won't know. But there's no question that the state of the administration, its unpopularity, was a big factor in the Republican loss.
We go back to phone calls. Sandy from Heartland, hi.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I agree with the previous caller, Steve, and I voted for Obama because I think he's a great man, very smart, and I think he can bring the country together. And I think the Republicans are out of touch. I keep hearing them saying McCain lost because he wasn't conservative enough, but I think he was way too far right for most Americans. And I think the clincher for me is when he appointed Sarah Palin as the vice president. She alienated a lot of women. And I think also the Republicans need to be more fiscally conservative, which I thought the Republicans were supposed to stand for. But since the Reagan administration, they have just been out of control with their spending.
Professor Lamas.
Well, yes, that's she mentioned the Sarah Palin, and it just happens I have the exit poll data on about her and Biden. Question is, who is qualified to be president if necessary? Asked to, you know, voters all over the country leaving the polls. 49% said only Biden, 21% said only Palin, and 17% said both. And then, of course, we have the breakdown of how people voted. So of those, that 49% who said only Biden, of course, 91% voted for Biden and Obama-Biden. And then of the 21% said Palin only, 96% voted for her. And then those who said both, most of them voted for McCain as well. But I think the key from that finding is that 49% said only Biden.
Right. I still don't understand why they chose her, and I get in trouble when I say this from people who say, oh, I think she's wonderful. But when you look at the people at the top of the party, too, who were saying she's obviously not experienced. She was a lot of fun to watch. She has great enthusiasm. She was compelling in a sense. But with those kinds of numbers, which maybe nobody thought could be potentially possible when they nominated her, they thought she'd be a big hit with women, whatever, they were so off with that selection. And the Republicans usually run better campaigns than that. I don't fully understand that.
Well, I don't know the details either. I understand that Newsweek, in its quadrennial report on the what went on behind the scenes, has a lot of information about that. That's just coming out soon. In fact, some of it's available online. My wife was reading it, and there's some good material on that choice. In fact, she was not his first choice, but the thrust of it I get from Renee's report is that he was told he could not go with his first choices, Lieberman, and I think the second one was Pawlenty, mm-hmm, of Minnesota. I mean, he was basically told by all of his advisors, you cannot choose them; you must choose someone who will appeal to the conservative wing of the party. And then he went with her for reasons that are unclear. I mean, I can see the idea that there were many dissatisfied Hillary Clinton supporters. So the thinking might have been, well, if we put a woman there, we can
right.
win them,
right?
Or some of them. But that clearly did not work.
Right. You know, it's I keep thinking maybe I'm way off base here. Tell me what you think about the future here. When you see somebody like Pawlenty, I think he is a very impressive guy and probably would be somebody that more moderate Republicans could rally around. He's smart. He presents himself well. We keep hearing that Sarah Palin is the future of the Republican Party, but they're very different people, and I'm wondering how you think they're going to pick up and move on here.
Yeah. No, that's a great question, and we're certainly going to hear a lot about it in the future. I think, frankly, the Republican Party has great talent all through it, and the Republican Party has great history as well, their approach is different than the basic approach of the Democratic Party. They're much more reliant on the private sector and so forth. So these are going to be battles over what works, in the healthcare arena and in other big issues, Republicans can say that these policies adopted by the Obama administration and the Democratic Congress have failed, and they'll have plenty of strong leaders, I think, who could make that argument based on their traditions. And these are primarily the ones I'm referring to now, more the traditions flowing out of the many decades of the 20th century, and so the social conservative aspect of the Republican Party is fairly new, and I'm not sure that that it's not a winner in and of itself on the Republican side.
Thanks for your call, Sandy. Marty is next from Douglas County. Hi, Marty.
Hi, good morning. I grew up outside of Cleveland. All of my family is pretty much still in the area, and I wonder if this demographic has been studied at all. My sister rarely votes. And in fact, Kathleen, you won't believe this, she wasn't even going to vote this year.
Oh, my.
It seems so amazing. But she said, I ended up voting, and I voted for Obama because the ads that his campaign were running on television were so decent. Now, I live up in the northwestern part of Wisconsin. All of our television stations are from Minnesota. They're out of Duluth. And believe me, if you had to watch any of those ads being run by the Coleman-Franken Senate campaign, that was no picnic. It's a wonder.
I'm sure.
Those two guys. But I wonder, is that, what do you think of that, Professor Lemus?
There were some clever ads on both sides, but I think the Obama campaign had some classics. I mean, I think the rear view mirror ad is one that I know I'm going to show to students in the future. You remember that, the one that shows
sure.
President Bush and in the rear view mirror as the car goes on and saying we can't go back. Then the final picture is of not just Bush in the rearview mirror, but Bush and Cheney together.
Because we didn't see that
McCain.
Here.
Oh, you
yeah,
didn't.
Bush
huh?
and McCain. You could find that easily enough on YouTube. Just put in something about rearview mirror and Obama campaign. I bet you will come up. You know, here's again the advantage of having the internet now.
Hmm. But isn't it interesting that her sister voted on the basis of decency of ads?
Well, that's not a new finding of those of us who've been studying and previous generations studying voting behavior. You know, there was a classic work done in 1960 called The American Voter, in which the voters were classified and the way they think about politics. And there were about 20-25% of the electorate who really had no ideological component, not even a partisan component to their thinking, that they sort of went with the goodness and badness of the times. And that was a pretty flimsy basis to vote on, because frequently they didn't really understand how the candidates fit into those times and what was happening. So that it's just true. I mean, we like to talk about politics, read about it, and study it, but there are people who live very nice lives completely ignoring all this.
And this kind of fits in with Obama as the candidate and now the president-elect. People are saying he's a decent man, he's an intelligent man, he's not getting all hysterical and, you know, flinging here and there. And getting back to my sister, she hates politics because people are so dishonest and it can just get so down and dirty.
Yes, the backbiting, the cutthroat part of it. This was all in that book, The American Voter in 1960. You see those kinds of comments from voters. They don't like it, and that's just part of the territory.
Yeah. Thanks, Marty. Thanks for your call, Leslie from Preston, Minnesota. Hi, Leslie.
Hi, boy. I have to totally agree with that previous caller. I missed her name, but
Marty.
Exactly, yes. I used to listen to both Republican and liberal news talk radio, and when I found Wisconsin Public Radio, you guys were so decent, and that I can't go back at all. I can't listen to Rush or anything. You guys are decent. That's what drew me to you, and what you have said for the last 18 months about Barack and what your callers have called in and said about him is exactly what people are finally saying now, and that was so heartening to me. Is like, yes, the world does feel like me, where I used to feel so like, why doesn't everybody get it? What do they see in these guys that are jumping and shouting and these mean-spirited kind of people? You know, that's exactly his integrity and his way about him, his coolness. That is what I would like in a leader.
Thank you, Leslie, for the call.
Yeah, that's very interesting the way she articulated that.
It is going to be interesting. I have watched a lot of comedy shows as well. I'm wondering what people like Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert and Saturday Night Live, they haven't found anybody. It's easy to nail somebody who's got some real peculiarities. This guy is you know, so inspirational, so cool. Doesn't get frazzled. You know, what are they going to do with him?
I'm thinking of the Saturday Night Live skit that went back to the primaries where they played up how coddling the reporters were towards Obama.
Right.
You remember that?
Yes, sure.
They showed that in their retrospective recently. That was funny, and I think they'll probably work that angle for a while.
Yeah, I would imagine so.
And of course, you know, for humor, I mean, you can't beat that Al Smith dinner. Where both McCain and Obama.
They were both so funny, weren't they? I love that dinner.
Funny. I'm delighted that is out there on YouTube and other sites. People really should look at that.
Right.
Listen. Yeah.
You can't underestimate the importance of humor, right? In a political campaign as well. There wasn't a lot of it in this one. There could have been a little bit more.
Absolutely. I think it was great. And Sarah Palin gets a lot of credit for that. I mean, you know, Tina Fey, of course, gets part of it.
That's right.
But they were funny together. And, of course, when Sarah Palin appeared on Saturday Night Live, I thought that was hilarious. And, of course, the Tina Fey skit where she, you know, said, "I'm going rogue on you." And, of course, McCain was on the stage then. You remember?
Oh, yes.
And she pulled out the Palin in 2012. No, McCain was, you know, good-spirited about it. He went along with that.
He sure did, yeah. yeah. Thank you so much for being with us. We'll talk again. Professor Alexander Lamas, our guest, Associate Professor of Political Science at Case Western Reserve University. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, to John Treader for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. And thank you, everybody, for all of your calls. They're still just flooding in. I know that you want to keep talking and keep talking. Don't worry. We'll have all things political for you next Monday. We can do that, right? We don't have to give up on that. I'm Kathleen Dunn. News ahead will return on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.